Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's time for another Bears podcast where we talk about the scintillating 2023 Chicago Bears. Back again to hash it out are the Mike Pees, Mike Pusateri, and Mike Presnowski. Guys, how are you?
Doing good. How are you?
Oh, I'm incredible.
Delightful.
Doing great. Okay, so if you're here, you know how to find the podcast, so congratulations. There's also a companion newsletter at pointlessexercise.com. Mike Pusateri, any public appearances that you'll be making in the next week or so?
I was trying to figure out what strike line to join. I'm thinking Warner Brothers tomorrow or Thursday. That's usually my go-to. So that's where the good folks can find me.
Can you go and yell at them for no season 3 of Winning Time?
Yeah, getting canceled.
Somebody have to make up a sign for that too. The crazy thing about it, well, canceling it was crazy, but just they didn't have to make that announcement so soon. I mean, they could have waited for months. I mean, wow, it's like and I haven't seen the finale yet.
Well, that's why they did they put a coda on the finale. Basically telling you all the things that happened in the next few years to the Lakers. So, but it does not. The final actual shot is clearly set up for season 3 coming behind it, and then they had a scene at the end, which they had to be clear that they filmed months ago. They didn't want to get accused of whatever.
Right,
and then
right.
They write then you see it's just typical. It's like Pat Riley won 6 titles with the Lakers and 3 more with the Heat. They do all that stuff.
Oh, I see.
So I think that's why it was going to be obvious when you saw it. So they figured they might as well fess up. But yeah, I knew it was getting canceled because you told me.
Yeah, that was the rumors for that show all for the last couple of months, is that it wasn't looking good, even though it is a terrific show. Yeah. Would have been better had they cast me, well, of course, and I could have saved it, sure.
You'd make a perfect Pat Riley.
No, I was up for several smaller roles in that show, but it was
One of them was Dick Motta, right? Wasn't that one that you?
Yeah, Dick Motta was one of them.
He didn't appear until season 2.
Yeah.
He was in it for about 3 seconds.
Yeah, there you go.
The guy did look like him, though. I knew who he was supposed to be, but not
you're really
as good.
All...
did not do as good a job as you would have, of course.
Well, clearly, but no offense. I'm sure he's a wonderful actor. But they really did. I mean, the guy who played Larry Bird looked exactly like Larry Bird. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's an incredibly well cast show.
Yeah,
and well acted, and the basketball scenes are good. Like usually,
really good.
Kind of cringe. They were really good.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. I know a couple of the guys who were like the guys actually playing, basketball. a lot of them are former college guys who played ball in college and stuff. It's a good show.
I mean, you can tell how well the Bears are playing. That I'm now talking about Winning Time at the beginning of the podcast instead.
that should clue you in as to how good the Bears game was.
But the guy who played Magic Johnson is great.
Yeah.
And if you don't get that right, then you don't have a show. And he
absolutely
was great.
The guy who played Kareem was great.
He was excellent. Crap, what was I gonna? Oh, the whole the legacy of this is going to be that it broke up the Adam McKay Will Ferrell partnership because Will wanted to be
that's
Jerry
exactly
Buss.
Right.
And when you see it, it's when you watch it's ridiculous because John C. Reilly is
so good.
He just becomes Jerry Buss. You just forget.
Yeah,
you forget that that it's John C. Reilly. It's just Jerry Buss. Yeah, it was really good. It was a really good show. I mean, the first bad sign was season 2 was 7 episodes to 10.
Yeah,
which kind of felt to me like there wouldn't have been a season 2 without Adam McKay, right? You go. We can't. We're not going to do a full thing. What can you do with 7, and then we'll see, which is basically tough shit.
Period pieces too, like those are really expensive, so studios don't often like to do period pieces, so there's all kinds of stuff.
But anyway, the good people can find you
yes,
MikePusateri.com.
There and at Twitter X, at Mike Pusateri and Blue Sky. I think that's it's Mike Pusateri, something like that. Yeah. It's Mike Pusateri.
If you go to the post, I've got the whole list of where you find all of us.
Thank you very much. That's just, just go to the post. Yeah.
Just see the post.
You just click on it. All right. And Praz, what have you been up to?
Got episode 8 of the Cubs podcast in the books, Bums in the Bleachers, part of the Chicago Sports Bums. Myself and John Oliva, we record every Monday night. Wasn't exactly a fun episode last night, recording right on the heels of the Diamondbacks sweeping the Cubs and putting the Cubs playoff chances in jeopardy, but you know, looking a little bit better tonight.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah. Definitely. You can follow me on Twitter, Prazmaster. Follow me on Blue Sky, Praz, and the podcast show account, Bums in Bleachers. Name of the show, Bums in the Bleachers, part of the Chicago Sports Bums.
Okay. I got a sponsorship update for this. I haven't heard back yet from DraftKings or Taco Bell, but it's going to be now sponsored by Chuck Testa. He's a taxidermist from Ojai, California, and I'm going to put his commercial at the beginning of at the top of the post, and you're going to want to see it. You're going to want to see Chuck Testa, and I'm going to if the Bears do what we think they're going to do on Sunday, I may very well have Chuck join us, taxidermize something while we're he'll just be in the background. We'll do a video pod. Okay. He'll just be stuffing an elk while we talk about Patrick Mahomes stuffing the Bears.
So okay. Yeah. Or stuff a bear. He should start to stuff a bear while he's
there. You go.
Yeah. He's in Ohio. You say I could ride up there and just we could do the pod together.
That'll be great. He's in Ohio. Yep. Okay. It's something. Wait till you see it.
Oh boy.
All right. So the Bears went to Tampa over the weekend, and it wasn't as bad as the Packer game.
Oof.
But it was low ball. It was still bad.
Still bad.
It was still bad. On the scale from good to terrible, it was horrible.
It was horrible. It was horrible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's start with a positive. It's weird you can start with a positive for a defense that gave up 460 yards, something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Considering the fact that they held the Bucs to one touchdown on offense. And did it without a secondary.
Yeah.
And in the heat, and they were on the field the entire game.
Yes, they were.
I'm going to give a little kudos to the Bears defense, which I'm looking here quickly to see just how many yards they gave up. Because it's a
437.
Yeah. Yep. They were on pace. They gave up almost 300 in the first half. They were on pace to give up almost 600 yards, and they didn't.
That would have been great. Yeah.
So good job.
No sacks again. 317 yards to Baker Mayfield, I believe, in the air. It was horrible. The defensive line is awful, and somehow the offensive line is even worse. And our GM is a former offensive lineman. You would think building the lines would have been in his wheelhouse, but...
it wasn't a good one.
He's like, sad guys.
Like,
yeah.
I like this guy. Reminds me of me.
Exactly. Reminds me of me. Yeah, right.
No, Ryan, no.
It's a David Ross theory. That's why we have Tucker Barnhart and all the, that's why he's playing these guys. Hosmer.
Yeah. Oh my God! Yeah, I mean, built from like the lines, and you drafted Darnell Wright, you acquired Yannick Ngakoue. Where the hell have they been?
Oh, we saw Yannick. He was
whiffing.
He was going. He was running. He was chasing little Baker Mayfield, getting right at him, and then just let him ooze right through his finger. Baker is elusive. That little guy, the Nick Madrigal of NFL quarterbacks, it's hard to catch. I think I referred to him as sprightly.
Yes.
Tough to get your hands on a Baker Mayfield. Yeah, he should have had two sacks. That would have given him three on the season. Well on the way to the 40, I predicted. So they have one through two games.
Yeah,
they're averaging. Right. They're on pace for 8.5 sacks.
Nice. That's terrific.
Ngakoue had 9 last year.
Beautiful.
By himself. All right. See if you think this is a bad sign.
Okay. Whatever you're gonna say, yes, it's a bad sign.
So they're
no sign.
The two linebackers who play the most, Tremaine Edmonds and TJ Edwards, combined for 28 tackles. All right, linebackers supposed to tackle guys, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
The next four leading tacklers, defensive backs. Tyreek Stevenson, Greg Stroman, Jaquan Brisker. Jaquan, who spent the first half with his head between his knees in the injury tent again.
Right.
And Elijah Hicks, who came in for him. And I really enjoyed Elijah's attempt to tackle Mike Evans on the sidelines, which was just point your head at the ground and just maybe burrow under him.
Yeah.
Elijah, just he's right by the sidelines. I know he's big. Just shove him. You don't even have to tackle him. Just give him a nudge.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tyreek Stevenson's getting bullied all game, too. Like, it was a brutal effort.
There were two... The defense, they gave up two massive plays, right? I mean, they gave up a lot of massive plays, but two in particular. The long, the 61-yard pass to Mike Evans, where he literally just shoved the defensive back.
He did.
Out of the way. And even Moose Johnston, who hasn't had a coherent thought in like 9 years, is like, oh, come on. I mean, both arms completely extended, and he's just shoving him off, and then he runs for 60 yards. And the other long one was the touchdown pass to him that Tyreek is like all over him. Like, he's actually there, like in his face, and it's just, you know, Mike Evans is tall, and he's good. And, so I this is one of the things I pondered was whenever they show Justin, he's all, you know, he's on the bench. He's got like the, what do they use, the Surface or whatever, the inferior iPad. Take that thing away from him. Just have him watch the other team, and maybe it would have been like, hey, you know, when Baker's in trouble, all he does, he just throws it somewhere near Mike Evans.
Yeah.
Maybe I should just do that with DJ Moore. Right. Like, Arrow, just DJ, go get it.
You can just do that, or the pocket breaks down, just take off.
Right. Scramble like Baker's doing, or find the big man. Find the big man that they gave up, you know, the first overall pick for.
Who had a good game, but only got, he caught 6 passes, but he should have thrown to him like 15 times, not 8 or whatever it was. They actually threw his direction.
He had 7 targets.
Seven. Yeah. That's so he's 4 the first week, right? Mm-hmm. 2 catches on 4 targets first week and 6 on 7 the second. That's a good percentage. The number's way too fucking low. But it's a good percentage. And so Darnell Mooney must have got hurt, apparently, right? During the game, he disappeared because the little white guy was all of a sudden out there. The Tanner Turner. And Keith Ortigo was
out there. Tanyan.
No, the other guy with the T's. The guy they got from he wasn't even on the team all preseason. They got him when the Bengals cut him. The one who freaked everybody out because he knows the punt rule, which was the Bucks touched a punt without downing it, and he like just tried to reach in to grab it, like he was gonna sneak it out of there and run.
Yeah.
And everybody freaks out that it's a fumble, and it's like, no, I mean, this happens enough, right? Like the first time you see that, you're supposed to freak out. Every other time after that, you're supposed to be. That's right. That's a no risk play for the return team once the coverage team has touched the ball.
Well, I admit, like the broadcast team to not knowing that rule, but I also didn't see there was no advantage of it though either. I mean, yeah, there's no harm. Exactly. I just don't know what he's doing. I mean, the best thing.
I was confused by that play too. I thought that might have reactivated it into a live ball when he touched it, but luckily it was already declared dead at that point.
Right.
No, it's happened before where like the punt return team has like hit the ball but not bothered to actually down it. And then everybody starts to run off the field. and some guy scoops it up and just takes off and gets scores a touchdown. Yeah, and this one, he wasn't going to it, this. It was a fool's errand, right? There was nowhere to go. But at the same time, nothing bad can happen. You cannot lose the ball. Even if you pick it up and you run down the field and you fumble it, it goes back to the spot where the punt was touched. If you run it back and there's a penalty and it would force you back farther than the spot where the ball was originally touched, the ball just goes to the spot where it was touched. It's like the one free play. The other rule that very seldom gets used is after a fair catch on a – is it a kickoff?
A free kick?
You get a free, you could choose to kick. How about this rule? This is another good example of how good this game was. So we're not talking obscure rules instead. It's actually a rule in football that if you give up a touchdown, it's actually your choice whether you kick or receive. If you want,
you could
kick off after you give up a touchdown if you wanted to. I know Bill Belichick is just dying to use this rule sometime. Like in some in the in like Marty Morn like Marty Morningweg, you know, got still get shit for doing actually what was the right thing, right? That game in Champaign where the Bears and Lions went into overtime and the Lions won the toss and he gave the Bears the ball. And he gave him the ball because the Bears hadn't done shit all day. They got a couple they got a couple lucky plays, a field goal, and the Lions never touched the ball and they lose. It didn't make what Marty did strategically, it was right. Because I mean, I remember watching at home going, oh, shit, well, it's going to be 3-and-out, and then the Lions are basically going to be in field goal range immediately. Plus, it was really windy that day, and the Bears were going to have to go into the wind. So I could see, like, some kind of horrible weather thing where some team is like, you know what, we'll give it back to you. You're going to lose it.
And yeah, like a snowstorm in New England, Belichick will be like, yeah, here, take it.
You know he's probably going to try that this year, too, with the Patriots going nowhere.
We put in a good 15 minutes before we got to this point. Who are we firing?
Yeah.
Definitely Luke Getsy. Please, Luke Getsy.
Anybody else?
I would fire. You talk about before this week or just
right now? Just launch him.
Certainly
don't get
launch Getsy.
Don't get on a plane to Kansas City.
Yeah, you don't need. Yeah, you could have launched Getsy.
Right.
I mean, you could launch Flus as far as I'm concerned at this point. I mean, I had him go to the end of the year. That looks pretty generous. But Getsy, I mean, you know, they hire him because he coached, you know, Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, well, Aaron Rodgers has been coaching Aaron Rodgers for the last 10 years. And anyway, and Nathaniel Hackett, and we've all seen what a goof that guy is. He was the offensive coordinator. This guy Getsy was basically Grover Dill to Nathaniel Hackett, Scott Farkas.
Well, I don't know that he was because the offensive coordinator at the Packers doesn't call the plays. So it could very well be that Nathaniel Hackett was Grover Dill to to what's his face, their dainty little head coach, and then that Getsy was we never even met Grover's toady. The toady doesn't get a toady.
Yeah, right. So he's a toadyless. Okay, that's even worse. Forget.
Yep.
He can't even be Scott Farkas's toady. Yeah. It's been a disaster. He's clearly not. I mean, I'm sure you guys probably saw Tim Jenkins was on a lot for the last, you know, talking about the Bears and the quarterback play. He's clearly not. Fields isn't blameless, certainly, but they don't seem to have any intention of how to use him properly. They're evidently adjusting his footwork. They're certainly playing away from his strengths, and it's not helpful at all.
Yeah. One thing we're seeing a lot, too, is that, like, Fields is a lot of times waiting for guys to get open. He's not anticipating his receivers getting open. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he'll see them be open, but they might not still be open by the time the ball gets there.
And what makes that really frustrating, right, is on the second touchdown drive, he did it like 3 times, including the touchdown pass to Claypool, which is the kind of throw could not get him to try. And he had to, there was one place he had to put it. He had to get it through 2 defensive backs, and he had to put it in the right spot, and he made a perfect throw for a touchdown. And you're like, all right.
Right.
It's like, you know, Justin, it's almost worse that you just showed us that. Because
like,
where
we know
the,
you
where
can
the
do
fuck
it.
Is
it
at?
And I think it seems to be like a combination, yes, of him, but also they got him all tied up in knots trying to figure another change in his footwork. I'm sure they've got him overthinking everything.
Wow.
But he's just got to cut him loose. I mean, the man can play. The man can make plays.
Look, here's a simple strategy to go with. Just give him the Mike Martz 7-step drop back like Jay used to do and let him figure his way out of it, because that way he'll be further back from the defensive linemen who are charging at him, you know, with this balsa wood offensive line they have protecting him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that I started that sentence wrong. It's not that I find it hard to believe. I believe all this stuff. It has to be, both things have to be true, right? It's not a good offense, and there are things in a regular NFL offense that he either can or won't do. You know, they got away from the run. Last year, it took them 6 weeks to turn into this run-heavy team, but that honestly was just to survive the season.
Right.
Because you can't do it. He can't run 20 times a game. You're going to carry him off in a body bag. You might score some more points, but then by week six, he's going to be in traction, and that doesn't do you any good. But at the same time, you can't overcorrect to the point then where you take it out of the offense altogether. And I think they think, well, we put these RPOs in for him, and then he can run if he sees it and he wants to go. And that's the same. It's not the same thing, right?
No.
Sometimes you just have to tell him, okay, we're going to block this like a run. We're not going to half-ass block it like it might be a pass or it might be a run. We're going to block it like a run, and you're going to run it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can't run very many of those a game, but that forces the defense then to account for it a lot, which right now they don't have to. And clearly defenses are playing the Bears differently. Mm-hmm. They're basically saying, okay, buddy,
for sure,
throw. Like, we're going to, you know, one of the teams, like, because the Bears, it's all, it seems wrong, but I think it's true. The Bears' terrible receiving core last year actually made it easier for Justin to run, because teams just wanted to play those guys man-to-man because they couldn't get open. You could shut them all down. But then the problem with that is you're running down the field with your back to Justin Fields when he takes off. Nobody's going to play this team man-to-man anymore, because you've got better receivers, and you don't want him to run. You basically – it's the old when the Packers said about Jay – we're just going to make it play quarterback.
Yeah.
That's what teams are going to do, and they've already done in the first 2 weeks to Justin Fields. It's, all right, buddy, we know you can run over our ass. You're going to have to throw it. And we see lots of replays where he just is frozen back there. Like, the worst thing about it, the offensive line is not as bad. It's not as bad as last year. But it's still erratic. Like, he can't count on... You know, you'd like to be a quarterback and at least go, okay, this is a play that's going to be a challenge for them to block. I'm on the alert. Or this is a play I know they can block. I don't think there's any of that. I think it's flip a coin as to whether they're actually going to block it or not, which means he has to be on a constant state of, I'm going to get rushed, which makes it hard for him then, even when he does have a good pocket. And there were several examples against Tampa where he had ample time to throw. He had guys open. He doesn't throw it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but that's not just a function of he's afraid to throw it. That's a function of the six plays before it, where just as he was about ready to throw it, he had three guys on him.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Right. Right. And you also don't want to coach the aggressiveness out of him either, because when the defense is playing man to man, if it's second and long, and the pocket breaks down, and that defense is man to man, run and get down and protect yourself. Run down and protect yourself, and just do that. And it feels like they've got them all tied up in knots because what they're trying to do.
It feels like a lot of times he's not making the right reads either. And I don't know if that's a function of him just not having enough time to throw, but you know, on those option plays, you know, take what's given to you, especially if you do get those man to man options, like you're saying.
Right.
To me, the most predictable thing happened from week one to week two. Week one, he went through his progressions too fast, right? Like, it was almost like he was like, oh, I want to get to the four. It's a 1, 2, 3, 4. On Sunday, he was slow to get to them because he had a whole week of slow down. You're missing guys that are open.
Right.
And that's the kind of shit. This is why the play calling is whatever it is. But if my trouble with Getsy is that this kind of shit should have been handled a long time ago. Like, the mistakes they make are not, if their worst mistakes were, that's a stupid play call. That's one thing, but it's not. It's a combination. That's a stupid play call. Why does it take Justin so long to get to take his fifth step? You know, why are two, it happened again where two receivers ran the same route right next to each other.
Right. Right.
That's all stuff well, that is, that's 100% on the, that's on the design or at least the execution of the offense. Right. Then right. What that says to me is you're not, you can't teach this offense.
Right.
And that's, well, yeah, that's what you get offensive coordinator fired. Not just, I disagree with that play call. It's, the play call didn't have a chance because you had five guys that didn't even do the right thing on it.
Well, yeah, and Andy, and you and I talked about this a little bit last year too. How there is going to be a danger very soon, I think, of this. It's going to turn into this coaching staff versus Justin Fields. It's going to be, they're going to try to save their ass, and it's going to be, he can't play in our system, and Justin Fields can probably play. I mean, he could be he could still be a very, very good quarterback. He's a talented guy, but it's going to turn into that.
I think that's true, but I don't know if he's good.
He certainly has a lot of talent, and I think he's a smart guy. And you know, we don't know yet. I think he can be very good. I mean, you know, compared to some of the crap we've seen the Bears put a quarterback.
Right,
there's my guy.
I mean, he has physical attributes, but that doesn't mean you can play. It doesn't mean you could play the position. But also at the same time, it's, you know, he came in the worst possible situation.
Yeah, he did.
He came in to a coach that had clearly decided the best thing for me is for me to get through this season is to not play the rookie so that it's like, well, he spent all year learning under me, and now next year, man, it's going to be great. Wait till we unleash him. It was clearly what Nagy was trying to do, was just keep him parked there to buy himself an extra year.
Oh, right.
And sure. Then Andy Dalton gets hurt in the second game, and Justin's got to play, and then you go to Cleveland, and he should have got fired during the first half because of the scheme he put together for that.
Right, right.
And so even if this coaching staff had come in and had the most genius offense in the world, they had to spend the first season not just teaching him shit he didn't learn under Nagy, but unteaching him things that he had learned under Nagy. And right. Then the big concern would be that there are things that he's being taught right now that would have to be undone
right.
again. You know, it's gone from we wasted 1 year now to, well, maybe we wasted three. Well, and if you waste three, then he's going somewhere else.
Four. Right. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
and the cycle kind of repeated itself too, with like going back to Mitch's first year with Fox. Like, you had him under a lame duck head coach as well, and you had no intention of him developing under the current head coach that you had. You look around the league at like the coaches that were hired the offseason the Bears hired Matt Eberflus. Do you really think that Daniel Jones is anything special in New York? Not really. I would take Justin Fields over him. But they're making it work because they got their coaching hire right, and they actually like put some thought into it instead of just going with the guy that Bill Polian suggested to George.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even that, if Dable is the guy for the Giants, they got beat the first week 40-0, and they were down 21-0 to the worst team. You know, there's a team worse than the Bears, and it's Cardinals.
Yeah, true.
And they had they pulled that game out of their ass. You know, it's, you can easily look at this and go, well, this shit doesn't seem like it's certainly not heading in the right direction.
No, right, but you look at Dable and those other guys, you're like, okay, these. When you look at their credentials, you're like, yeah, these guys look like they're going to be real head coaches. I never got that with Eberflus. I was always against a defense. I'm always leery about a defensive coordinator anyway. And, you know, he had the 10th best defense in Indianapolis. Okay. I mean, so what? That's not like that. You know, when we were talking in those days, like, they got to get a guy who can really develop Justin Fields. That's what they got to hire. And they went with Eberflus, which was a And they went for him for kind of like, you know, the what seems like the stupidest reasons. Poles was like, oh, we get along really well. He's like a brother, and, you know, we can talk. Yeah, it's, well, great. That's not a reason to have this man be your head coach.
The culture is not simply – this is going to sound stupid. I'm trying to think of how to say it's going to sound stupid. The culture has to be irrespective of the results on the field, right? Like, it's there are bad coaches who win games and have a decent culture because teams tend to be happier when they win.
We're seeing that in Dallas right now, Mike McCarthy.
And we – it's really difficult to I don't know. I get frustrated by this because both ways. Number one, if the Bears change coaches tomorrow, it wouldn't break my heart. The other thing is, this is very – this whole – the dialogue around this and all this stuff is very Bears and Bears fans. And that was when Nagy left, and it was got to tear this shit down and start over because this thing is a complete mess, and the Bears never do it. They never tear it down. They never try to start over. They just patch on and patch on and patch on. Right. And they literally stripped their roster down to where they only had 11 guys. The 11 guys started this season that were there the day that Poles and Eberflus took over. And the idea that their roster in year two was going to be good is it can't be a thing. You cannot rebuild an NFL franchise in, you know, in a year and 2 weeks. It just that's not how it works. But at the same time, you know, this one thing you can argue this 15 different ways.
Yeah, right.
If it looked like the most important player on your team was improving, then you look at the 0-2 start and you go, you know what? Yeah, it'd be great to win games, but the most important thing is being handled. And instead, we have the worst of both scenarios. We have a team that's not winning, and we have a quarterback that isn't, you know, isn't having any success.
Right, right. That's right.
And so that's where you end up with the. You know, you'd like to be able to say, well, of course, it's going to take more than a little over a year. But at the other side of it, you look at it and go, well, the signs you need to see, we're not seeing. And we're not going to see it Sunday. We know that.
That's for sure.
No.
I also think you can't overlook the fact that, you know, there's a human element of Fields isn't their guy. You know, and they're looking at maybe having two of the top five draft picks this year with a deep quarterback class. That's like the oldest trick in the book, too. It's like, well, you know, he wasn't our guy. So, but, you know, give us our guy. Let us get it this right this time. We'll get our guy, and that'll be the trick they used to try for both Poles and Eberflus to try to buy some time.
Well, I'll give you that might be what they do. But we disagreed on this last year. We're going to disagree on it again this year. I don't think that's the case. I think they absolutely want him. They want this to work. They want him. They would not have gone out and they wouldn't have traded away the number one pick to try to get him a receiver and do other things to try to make the offense better. They wouldn't have changed the offense last year. If their whole goal was we don't want Justin Fields. We're stuck with him. You just keep playing the offense they played the first 4 weeks last year. Make him try to play quarterback with that awful offense last year, and he's going to fail. And there's there it is. You got what you wanted. They didn't do that. They're trying to make it work. Now the byproduct that is going to be they're both going to at least Poles. And I'm pretty sure both of them are going to outlast him if he fails this year, and then they will do the old start over because anybody would do that.
Sure.
But I don't think that. Certainly to me, it does not seem like that was the master plan, which is, well, fuck, I can't believe we're stuck with this guy. Why wouldn't they have traded him in the offseason? There were people who thought they were going to, and there were people who were advocating for it.
Right. Well, I mean, who knows what goes
on. Which doesn't scream to me, we don't care if this works or not, because we've got a plan B.
I think all valid points. No question. But I think you can all that can be true, and it can also be true that, well, they are not putting him in the best position to succeed. Clearly, Getsy is not.
Well, what if
they're
what
not
if
taking advantage of the skills?
But what if their argument is, this is a season that we want to win, but I mean, we don't have a playoff team. He's got to play quarterback like a quarterback. That's the only way he has a future in the league, and we have a future with him, is he's got to play quarterback like a quarterback. Now, he's got to play quarterback like a quarterback who's also 6'3 and the fastest guy on the field and can do some things. There are things he has to prove he can do. He's got to be able to stand back in the pocket, and he's got to throw the ball, and he's got to do, you know, the things that we do see him struggle with. And maybe, what if that's the reason that they do it? Is this shit's got to happen.
I think they're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole, because he can be a success. He's not going to be a traditional. He's not going to be Aaron Rodgers. He's not going to be a guy like that ever. It doesn't mean he can't be a successful NFL quarterback. He can. But they're trying to force him into the Aaron Rodgers hole, you know, that type of quarterback. And that's not his skill set, at least at this point, I think.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, what's one of the great things until he blew his, got old and blew out his Achilles was, you know, Aaron Rodgers didn't run for 100 yards a game, but that asshole got out of the pocket and made a lot of big plays. And that's the kind of stuff they clearly want Justin to be able to do. That was the frustration they had in week one, was when the pocket breaks down, your guys are still running. Like, there are still plays to be made. And he showed no interest in trying to do that. And
I hear you.
You know, so I feel like I'm giving them way too much credit to say that that's what their plan is. But, I mean, if the whole idea with this season is, this is a 17-week evaluation about whether there's a year 4 and 5 and beyond of Justin Fields, then it's by week 17, you've got to feel comfortable that he can do most of the things that you need an NFL quarterback to be able to do. You got to be able to make those reads and make those throws in addition to the other things. And starting the season with the offense that you had at the end of last year, where you're going to run him, you know, 14 times a game, that's, you're never going to get to the other part if that's how you start it.
Well, it doesn't have to be either or, but it's that clearly was not going to work either. That's going to get him killed, no doubt about it.
No, I think the thing they're clearly going to have to change is, I think they were trying to avoid having to, like, load it up and run actual running plays for the quarterback. I think they honestly thought between, you know, I mean, if I'm Luke Getsy and I'm drawing up, like, well, I figure the pocket's going to break down, like, 11 times. So there's 9 chances for Justin to run, and then we're going to call 4 RPOs, and there's 13 chances for him to run. So we're not going to, you know, bring Kari Blassen game in the game and have him line up next to him and get ahead of him, and we're going to run a quarterback sweep. And we'll see as we go on if any of that actually happens, because clearly just to keep the ball and get your defense off the field once in a while, you're going to have to put some of those back in.
There's, yeah, absolutely.
And that was why they went in last year. It was basically, we've got to be able to control the ball a little bit.
You know, yeah,
we're going to be by 60 points some game because we're punting it back so much.
Yeah.
So at least run the ball, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's running for, you know, 180 yards and 3 touchdowns. And, you know.
Yeah.
The frustration for the fans is that not only are they 0-2, but you can be 0-2 and some of this could be fun. And there's just very little fun.
Yep.
First drive was fun.
Yeah.
You really felt like, okay, good. There it is. They figured this out. They dialed this in. And then we didn't see it again until the fourth quarter.
We saw it all last year during the long losing streak. Like, there were a ton of fun moments during the last, you know, 10 or so games of that season against a lot of really good teams, too. I mean, that Eagles game was really fun. The Dolphins game was really fun. When is this ever going to show up?
Maybe,
yeah,
maybe Sunday.
Exactly.
Maybe the near miss loss to the Chiefs. We'll look at it and go, well, that was a good time at least. And honestly, it probably, given the fact that they should have, you know, the expectations going to that game are none, right? Nobody thinks they're going to win that game.
Yeah. No, God no.
And so simply sticking with them for a while becomes, hey, look at that. You know, they did it. Like, everybody was, you know, the city was too keyed up for week one. Right. It was flashbacks
for sure.
to 18. And then it ended up, but it also was the second half was just such a shit show that you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you went to Tampa and you're like, okay, we got to win now. We got a must win in week two. And then you don't. And so maybe now in week three, when everybody's like, well, look at the Bears back to being the laughing stock.
Maybe
you lose 24-17. Yeah. Because the Chiefs offense is playing with the governor on it of Matt Nagy calling their plays.
Right.
So that helps a little bit.
That does help.
So maybe it'll, help. Maybe they'll keep it from putting a 48 up on the Bears. I don't know.
But I mean, you're right. But there, I think also, though, Bears fans, you know, we're thinking this could be a playoff team.
Yeah, the NFC North, we did our win-loss thing. And the win-loss thing gets jokey after a while. And, you know, when I had him go 9-8, and I'm like, well, you know, if you forced me to bet the over-under at 7.5, my money would have gone on the under.
Yeah.
So I clearly think this is like a 6 or 7 win team. But here's the scary thing, right? When's win one coming? Because we go to Kansas City, then you come home against the Broncos. It would have been nice for the Broncos to win one of those first two games.
Yeah.
Because now they're, you know.
I still think they're going to be a shit show, but that's where I think it's coming. That's where I'm at. But yeah, but
then they got a short week to the Commanders.
Easy. Right.
Then the Vikings. There's a, you know, there's always a chance with the Vikings. Then maybe the Raiders. We got the Raiders circled in.
The Raiders. 22nd.
This is a team that's lost 12 in a row. They haven't won a football game since they went to Foxborough.
And by 25
game since,
and by 25 or more, or by giving up 25 or more points too. Which is,
and they haven't won a home game since, what was the Texans last week? Like week 3, right?
Yeah.
Week 3, yeah, they went up 2-1. That produced the infamous Greg Gabriel tweet of saying, like, I, you know, this team is 2-1. I don't envision them only winning one game rest of the year. And then they did.
Prescient.
Yep.
This game is all about how do they at least look better in a loss?
Yeah.
And are there some fun moments? Do we have something?
Yeah.
That's what this game is all about.
In my mind, I kind of picture that this game ends up being like the Cowboy game last year, where they got thoroughly beaten. Like, Dallas never felt like the Bears were going to win that game.
Right.
But Justin made a lot of big plays. Bears scored a fair amount of points. And it was never a game they were going to win, but it was like, you know, that was kind of fun.
It was kind of fun, yeah.
You know, just give us, we don't ask for much.
Yeah,
just
a little fun.
We just want to be entertained. Like,
yeah,
we know you're not supposed to make the playoffs this year, but, you know.
Well, see, and that's the difference, because last year I think everybody would have said that. We know you're not going to make the playoffs. This year, a sizable portion of the fan base thinks they're going to think this is a playoff team.
I think a lot of that was, they looked at the division and felt like the division was bad. And so, well, yeah, the Bears, that's 6 games there where the Bears can, you know, win some. And then, and I looked at it and
had a fourth place schedule going into it, too.
Yeah. And I looked at it a little bit and thought, okay, I don't think the Vikings are that good. I also don't think the Bears can, like, win a game up there. So that's the best you get one. The Lions are not as good as everybody says, but they're, you know, they're, shit, the Bears are in year 2 of the rebuild. The Lions are in year 30. So they, you know, at some point, this has to start to pay off for them. And then I was annoyed by the fact that I looked at the Packers and thought, you know, it's not a bad team. They don't have the Hall of Fame quarterback anymore. But they do have a fair amount of good players. It was nice to see the Ryan Pace's Falcons beat them. And how about the play where Jordan Love ran up behind the center to do a quick sneak, and he made the call, and the center didn't snap the ball to him, and he fell over the center and the guard. And nobody moved, not even the Falcons. It's just this isolated gif of Jordan Love looking like he's completely hammered, stumbling into the middle of his own line. So that was worth something.
Yeah, that's some good comedy gold.
A lot was made of Shaq Barrett on the back-breaking. You know, for as bad as everything went, the Bears did get the ball with a chance to go down and kick it. Just a field goal would have tied the game. And then they had a offensive pass interference on Chase Claypool on a screen pass. And then the next play was a screen pass intercepted for a touchdown. And the Bears ran in the fourth quarter. They ran a screen play out of the same formation 4 times. It worked the first two times, which was nice gains to Herbert. The third time was the offensive pass interference on Claypool, and it, as much as, you know, as much as it's fun to pick on Chase, that one's not actually his fault.
Right.
That's the fault of the ball doesn't get thrown on time, and so the receivers who can't look back to see are too far down the field, and you're not allowed to block down the field on a screen pass. You can block at the line of scrimmage as long as the ball's thrown behind the line of scrimmage.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But by the fourth time, Tampa lines up, and they're like, this looks like it's going to be that screen pass.
Yeah.
Did their homework on it.
And I went into it in detail in the newsletter because there's three things that are true about a play like that. Number one, to me, a screen pass in the end zone is like the worst possible play you can call. Because you're already in the end zone. I guess he was at the they were at the five, I think. By the time he drops back, Justin's in the end zone.
Right.
And on a screen pass, you intentionally don't block guys. So you've got free runners to the quarterback as a design of the play, because the whole idea is to throw it behind them, and now you've got some room to run. And then a quarterback in the end zone is afraid to throw the ball away because intentional grounding is a safety. And even though you know in your head, you just fire it at the feet. If it's all botched, just throw it at the feet of the running back, and it won't be grounding. It's human nature to be like, oh, shit, I could give up 2 points in the ball here. So basically, your quarterback is going to throw that ball to the running back every time.
Yeah.
So it's a bad play call. That's a play Justin needs to recognize and go, oh, there's a very large man there. I can't throw it there.
Right.
But then it's a great play by Barrett that he not only sure. that he actually caught the ball and scored. So three things are good, but it all starts with what the fuck are you running that play for right there?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was rushing fields on that play and then got separation enough to make the play on it.
He said that because they lined up the same way, he in his mind he thought this could be a screen, and when they didn't try to block him, he thought, fuck, it's a screen. And so he basically started backing up, and that's where the ball was going to go. And that's the ball game, which is infuriating that, you know. But that's what we get. That's what we get to see every week. Get to see fun. Everybody watch the Bears, you see things you never saw before.
That's fun. You sure do. You sure do. Yeah.
Although, I mean, it's not... obviously the situation's not as good. It's Caleb Haney throwing the ball to B.J. Raji in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
Not God.
A play that shouldn't be called and a pass that shouldn't be thrown. Both things can be true.
Well, and you mentioned Claypool. You got to hand it to him. I mean, he was ready to be run out of – all Bears fans were ready to run him out of town last week, and he – you know, apologized to his teammates, said I messed up, and he played a pretty good game. And if anything, that is a feather in the cap of the Flus culture argument.
Because basically,
and I'll give it to Claypool for doing that.
Because when asked point blank, are you gonna? Is we talked about last week that Claypool probably shouldn't be active for this game. The Flus basically his answer without answering it was he's got some things to do. And apparently the things to do was A, work harder, and then B, you got to own it, right? You can't just pretend like people are making a big deal out of you, giving a half-assed effort. You have to go around, and he did. He is still, though, the Bears have him completely, and the Steelers did it too, and the Steelers just say, you know what, we don't need him. We've got other guys. He's a slot receiver, even though he's 6'4". He doesn't play like a big, physical, outside receiver. His whole game is running crossing routes and stuff like that. And he doesn't use his size. He doesn't post up defensive backs and you throw it up to him. He's just never done it. And so he has a poor skill set for the role that he's being asked to play. And they've already got a guy to play that role. When he's healthy, it's Mooney, who's better at it. Even so, you can say, "Well, just move Claypool inside." It's like, "Yeah, but Mooney's actually better at that than Chase is." You'd have to move Mooney to a role where he's not quite as good. So, I think they probably realized that a week after they got him. but that's too late.
Too late now, yeah.
You realize that the week before. You can't realize it the week after.
Yeah. Oh, right. Now that's why he was...
Was he announced? Was the announcement that Mooney would be out, was that... Did that come pregame, or was that, like, a game-time decision?
I didn't hear a word about it.
So that was... Yeah, because I wonder, like, if Mooney was active for that game, does Claypool still play?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Velas played, was active. I kind of assume that's who got activated instead.
Okay.
And here's another brilliant thing, right? So Velas only played a couple of plays on offense. He comes in for one, and they run an end around to him. And it's like everybody just points at him when he comes in. Like, watch, they're going to run this guy around end. The other thing they did that drove me nuts is they ran that end around. They ran it to the short side of the field. So even after he gets the ball and he starts to go around the corner, your sidelines are right there. Like, right. It negates some of his speed, yep. Because he can't, well, you know, unless he wants to run out of bounds and behind the bench. Run by the blue tent, say hi to Jaquan, and then just run up back onto the field.
Right. And I think the city was ready to be playing meaningful football games in October, and that is very much in doubt as we sit here after
weeks. Yeah.
No, it could be meaningful games in December again, which is, you know, hey,
going towards
here.
the draft pick.
We're in good shape. Somebody pointed out that because the Cardinals own the Texans' number one pick, that right now there's a good chance that the first four picks in the draft will be the Bears will have two and the Cardinals will have two.
Fantastic.
Now there's an ode to quality Chicago football.
Yeah,
the
two Chicago franchises
with the first four picks in the draft.
That would be that would be amazing.
Should have an honorary ceremony at Soldier Field for it.
It should.
bring back one of the Bidwells.
It's still probably live in Bridgeport. Yeah.
Is there a grandma Bidwell? Do they have a 100? Do they have a 100-year-old 82 that's still around?
How great would that be?
Because I'm sure we'd see her. Because who was it?
Yeah, her and Virginia would be best friends.
Because they were the. There was Lamar Hunt's wife. She was in her late 80s. And was it Martha Ford? I forget her name.
Martha Clay Ford, yep.
And her and them and Ginny. They were the three, the grand dames of the NFL.
Grand dames.
Now only Virginia is still around.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's look ahead to the excitement coming up on. Is this a 325 Romo Nance?
It's definitely a 325 game. Yeah.
Oh no.
Would it be Fox? It's Fox game. Because isn't that how it works when it's NFC on the road against an AFC team that they go to Fox?
It doesn't matter anymore. That's how it used to be. They have they've screwed that up for us.
They have.
Let's see what we have here. But you know, it looks like you are right. Oh yeah, you're right. It is. So they followed the old format.
All right.
And it's Kevin Burkhardt and Greg Olsen again.
I'll be one. Bright spot.
This is going. They don't have it yet on 506 Sports. But later in the week, they will tell you what percentage of the country is going to get this game. It might not be as much as typical because the other Fox late game is Dallas and Arizona, and Fox does love the Cowboys because the Cowboys.
Yes.
Cowboys. Oh, yeah. But so do the Bears. This Bear game will get you. We'll all watch it. Get mad at it.
Oh yeah.
Ratings will be fine. Exactly. They don't worry about that.
Nope. I.
Well, that'll be good. Then we get Tom Rinaldi can, you know, he can eulogize.
The At Bears least you guys can watch again. It for free. At least you guys get to watch it for free.
Oh yeah, that's right. You had to pay for this.
Yeah. Yeah, like a couple of weeks ago, we're watching TV and there's an NFL Sunday Ticket commercial on, and they're like, you know, talking about the price. My wife's like, she's like, you didn't pay for this.
She goes, you paid, oh no, I didn't.
Of course not. I didn't.
Well, just tell her that.
No need to look at the credit card statement.
If you tried to rely on NFL Red Zone, you'd never see the Bears with the ball the entire season.
Great.
Because they'd have to get in the red zone for for Scott Hansen to cut to it.
Or the gold zone.
Oh, God. Guess he doesn't call it that, I hope. If he does, that's a fireable offense. If he calls it the gold zone, he's fired. He doesn't even get – not only does he not get on the plane, he can't even step foot in Lake Forest proper. We call it the gold zone. So this is, as last I saw it, this is a the spread is 13.
That's what I saw. That's a lot.
Yep, same.
That's a lot, and yet it seems low.
Bears haven't covered either yet.
Well, I'll tell you this. I did a little bit of research. Last year when the Chiefs were 9.5 or better favorites against the spread, they only went 2-3 in against the spread. And since 2020, they're 9-9 in those games. Like, okay. The Chiefs, over the course of the last couple of years, have not always been the best at covering spreads.
That's some good intel. Okay.
So, and you've got the Nagy factor. So you got two things. Number one, right, his incompetence is always bubbling under the surface. But then you know he's like, he's going to call out all the stops for this. Like every trick play he's been holding back forever, they're going to run. This is
Matt Nagy revenge game.
Oh, God. See an offensive lineman catch a touchdown again.
So, what did I say in when I was hypothesizing 24-17?
Yeah, you did. Because so that stuck with me to 125 points. So
that would be them covering. Him. And that would be, that would be under the 47.5. I mean, if I'm betting my own money, I'm taking the over and I'm taking the Chiefs to cover. I mean, I'm not. How about this bet I made on last night? So on DraftKings, one of the bets they had,
While you were enjoying a Taco Bell, perhaps?
Yes, of course. And
waxing your taxes,
was on the phone with Chuck Testa. At 2,000, at plus 2,000 for the Steelers and the Browns.
Okay.
You bet that to get we needed to happen was you needed both teams to score a touchdown in each half and kick a field goal in each half. And then they gave some boost thing where you could put it in there and you could take the odds up 50%. So now it's 3,000 to 1. So a $10
bet.
Boost. Yeah. $10 bet, $300. So I'm like, we're going for that. Deshaun Watson.
I should have value in that.
So both teams, touchdown field goal in the first half. No problem. I was worried after Nick Chubb got hurt that the Browns weren't going to be able to score a touchdown in the second half. They come right down, score a touchdown. Now, all I need is a field goal out of them. The Steelers kicked a field goal early in the second half. Just need a Steeler touchdown. We're in good shape.
Right.
The Browns are driving, and they're in field goal range. And on a rollout, Deshaun Watson decides, yeah, I already got called for a face mask once. I want to do it again. They ended up, it was an obvious face mask. They didn't call it, but they called holding. So they get pushed back out of field goal range. They ended up punting. And I'm like, well, there's a lot of this half left. I'm not going to worry about it. Steelers can't move the ball at all, but they get a strip fumble touchdown. So now all I need is this Browns field goal.
TJ Watt.
But the touchdown put the Steelers up by 4 points.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, unless Sean McVay is the coach, they're not just kicking a field goal for the hell of it.
Right.
And so I did not pay off because the Browns can kick a field goal. But did you see that? That on the last play, down 10, last play of Rams 49ers,
I didn't see it.
Rams get a field goal to cut it to 7 at the horn.
And the spread was -7.5, yeah. Right?
And the reason they did it was, you know, the Rams have a guy up in the booth who, like, helps out with strategy. And basically it's like, well, we can't win the game, but we can score points. And the one of the total points is a tiebreaker for the playoffs. So you might as well, kick the field.
Might as well.
So there you go. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, gamblers all over the world had to be like, well, it's funny, you know, that's a bad beat, right? It's one of the, but nobody ever talks about the guys on the other side of that who are like, oh, shit. Well, there's no, they're not going to get a field goal here. And all of a sudden the field goal kicker runs out and it's free money.
Yeah. Like, you know, look at
this. Focus on the whole Scott Van Pelt bad beats thing. That's the pessimist view of it.
That's right.
There's just as many people on the other side who were going nuts whenever those bad beats happen.
It's a zero-sum game. Right. Somebody lost, but somebody won.
Somebody lost, somebody won. All right, so what do you guys think? Spread and the over-under.
I got what you got. Over and Chiefs covering.
I'll go opposite.
I'm
going under.
There you go.
I'm going under, and I think the Bears cover 13. To me, now that Chris Jones is back for the Chiefs, their defense seems to be working in order. They only allowed 9 points to the Jags this past week, so probably going to be a rough day for Justin Fields.
He's used to it by now.
Yeah.
No surprise. That's good. So when you watch College Football Game Day, you know, they put the graphic, when they do the picks at the end, they have both logos up and whatever. And Reese Davis always jokes, somebody's got to save the graphic. Because if everybody has picked, you know, the same team, somebody's got to pick the opposite team. So Prez, save the graphic for us.
Good. Good job, Prez.
Yeah. Yes. I'll be the Ditka in that infamous Bears-Packers game, yeah.
I didn't want the Flus using us for motivation. Although maybe we should. They could use some motivation. All right. Well, you know, part of the frustration, which I was venting, and it's nice to have you two here that I can vent to.
Yeah.
It's just that.
Absolutely.
This is no end in sight to this misery. I mean, we're. Hopefully, you guys are right. And the Broncos are such a mess that in a couple of weeks, that's when the Bears. They get the train back on the track. Because what were the Lions last year? They started off like. Weren't they like 1-7?
Yeah, something like
that. Yeah, that sounds right.
And then they went 8-2 the rest of the way or whatever it was.
Why not us?
Or 7, whatever. They exactly. 7-2.
Why can't we be this year's Lions?
Why can't we be a team like the Lions?
Teams have oft aspired.
What we're striving for these days.
The Lions had a, they unveiled a Barry Sanders statue, which I think is their first statue. And then they showed during the game, Barry was on the sidelines. He was talking to this very wrinkled old man, and I realized it was Wayne Fonts.
Oh my goodness!
Just like, oh fuck! Fuck Wayne Fonts.
Was he smoking a cigar?
Yeah, that asshole.
How old is Wayne Fonts? Do we know? I mean,
old.
Yeah, very old.
Well, let's look. Let's see how old Wayne Fonts is.
Let's go to the Google machine.
He's 83.
Oh, okay. 83. You know, I would have said older.
You know what? He doesn't look that bad for 83.
Yeah. Yeah.
But. Statue is it was okay.
It's not great. It's not great.
Sure, you got the
is
Cubs.
It as scary looking as the Harry Carey statue?
I was going to say they should have got the Cubs guy, but the second guy, the guy who did the players, not the original guy who did Harry being pulled sucked into hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of my big hope when they had to relocate the statues while they were working the stadium was that somebody would drop the Harry statue and break it. And then they would have to get a good one. But it made it unscathed. So
yeah,
that's too bad. This is great for a Bears podcast, but I don't care anymore. Do we know what the Ryan Sandberg one's going to look like? I mean, surely somebody knows by now. It was a year ago they announced it, so they've been working on it for a year. It's going to get unveiled next year.
Right.
I mean, in my mind, I know what it should be. And it should be him, like, bouncing up over second base with his knee up, making the throw on the double play with the flip-down glasses up. You know, that's, right. That's what I see.
That'd be good.
When I see Ryan Sandberg, that's what I see. I see that throw that he never
it
missed.
It would work.
But knowing the Cubs, it'll be, you know, him holding a Sloan toilet seat.
You know. Smoking a joint.
That's right.
Well, no.
Showing the hair.
It'll be him and
the hair plugs.
Him and Cindy with the corncob dress.
Oh, that wouldn't that be the greatest? They go. They don't let him see it, and they just unveil it at the thing. He just flips Tom off, storms off.
Ryan and Davey Martinez together. That would be a lot. What a statue!
That statue.
Two great teammates.
Ooh.
You think a lot of people head over to Navy Pier to sit on the couch next to Bob Newhart? Think about how many people would trek down to Gallagher Way to get their picture taken next to Cindy.
Oh, there you go.
It would be the biggest tourist attraction in town. I like it. That's got to happen. Mm-hmm. It'll probably be... they could have him doing one of his electric seventh-inning stretch scenes where he really riles the crowd up with the...
Brings the house down.
Go... Let's sing this one for.
Let's do it for
Harry.
Let's do it for Henry.
For Harry, who's been dead Harry, for 25 Ryan, years Harry. Now.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Many of us have herpes.